The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary. He's Eric. Welcome. My last name's McNamara. His last name is Harley.
All of that is true so far.
It is. Yeah. We're in the midst of it, as we are every night, on a whole bunch of different topics. We played last hour focus group on CNN of Hillary supporters, former Hillary supporters, who don't want Hillary, don't want Biden, don't want Sanders. They want the new young blood. They love Ocasio-Cortez, and they believe the president has committed crimes, even though they can't tell you specifically what the crimes are. So we thought it was interesting to play that because we know what the politicians think. One of the great mysteries is, what does the rank and file think? Now, right. I don't believe we're not that naive to believe that focus group was a cross-section of Democrats, because clearly it's not. It was Democrats who were Hillary supporters, and so, again, they all seem to be lock and step that Ocasio-Cortez is the next coming of the new Democrat party, and is this incredibly intelligent person. So if you're critical thinking, you're like, yeah, really? You want to discuss what she actually said? But I still think it's interesting that we got some people that want to comment on it. We'll get your calls and comments here coming up here in just the next couple of moments. U.S. Post, a record trade deficit. Was it $621 billion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For last year. China skyrocketing. Gap with China all-time high. Not surprising.
No.
With the tax cuts and the way the economy grew last year, America was growing. The world was not growing. America was buying more products, even with the tariffs that were put on Chinese products of roughly 10%. And that really didn't hit until what? September?
Right, yeah.
So it wasn't going to affect, you know, really much of the trade imbalance. And even after the tariffs were on there, the 10% really didn't affect it because of the price difference still. And so you had it. Look, we had said this in the very beginning. The president isn't going to be able to change a trade imbalance unless he destroys the American economy. And that would be 100% tariff on all Chinese products and all products from around the world in order to build the American industry. So that wasn't going to happen, as we have said. And now the president sort of is backed into a corner on this. Because, as we know, when you look at the problems that we had, agriculture got killed in the United States.
Yeah. Right. What's interesting, too, is that you started to see the poll numbers for the president in the Midwest drop in the fall of 2018, the support.
You and I talked about this off the air, and I think it's important to bring up on the air, because we talked about it off the air, and it was just like we were just in a conversation, you know, what are the worries that we have come the 2020 election? What are the worry points that the president should be concerned about?
Because I would like him to be reelected.
Yes, and me too.
So yes. I lined it out yesterday. It was off the air during a mid-show meeting during one of the breaks and just talking about it. And I said, you know, I mean, because I've said it on the air that there's damage to those farmers. I don't know how you repair that damage. I'm not saying it can't be done. I just don't know how you do it. And you don't have to ask me. You can ask the farmers. And there are plenty of stories out there about how when the government came in and said, well, here's several billion in aid, they were like, the farmers were like, no, we want the trade routes open again. We want the trade open. We want our farms to survive. And you look at the states where farming is the top or one of the top industries, and everybody that is affected when that local economy starts to slow down. I don't know how you fix that, but in the Midwest, and there's that direct correlation. You mentioned those tariffs were China hitting in the fall, and that's when his numbers in the Midwest started to go down. So how do you repair? And you're going to have to. Politically, I don't know how you repair the damage that's already been done to those farm states in the Midwest. But it has to be done.
Soybeans fell by $4 billion. Wheat, $660 million. Vegetables, $290 million. Exports of iron and steel mill products declined by almost $1 billion.
And you may look at the... And I saw something the other day where it was a total of $43 billion altogether for farmers. And I don't know how they came to that number. I didn't get into the methodology that report was showing. Because again, I'm not doing the math on that. But here's the question. If you're in one of the farming states, and you're looking at, you know, of course, 2020 and who you're going to get behind, does he lose the trust? Because I could see a number of those farmers saying, all right, he is a guy who, and with Iowa in 2016, he said, look, you can't be against ethanol subsidies and win Iowa. Now, he didn't win Iowa, but he made that point. That's what he believes, and that's how he practices. And that's how most major politicians practice, that you need to appease, well, going back to Al Gore, who finally admitted in 2010 that in 2000 he lied about ethanol, and he said eventually 10 years later, it was not good policy, and I was saying it because I was trying to get elected president. So then you look at the dynamics of this current president. Are you going to trust him, I guess, if you're a farmer? And damage has been done to your industry, your state, your particular farm. Are you going to trust that he's not on a whim after he's elected and is no longer going to run ever again? Are you going to trust that he's going to never go down that road again? He's never going to... impose tariffs on China or anybody else that might affect your state?
Or declare a national emergency based on, you know, what the not national emergency, because that's the more of the border situation, but on trade, national security.
Mm-hmm.
That, for example, the steel tariffs were based on national security that everybody knows was bogus. Everybody,
right.
That was bogus.
Right.
There was no national security issue on steel and aluminum. The president was attempting to negotiate. He still hasn't taken them them off. And yes, he's helped the steel companies while he has hurt anybody who uses any steel manufacturing or aluminum manufacturing goods.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when people talk about socialism, you want an example of socialism that the president practices? The steel and aluminum tariffs on Russia, or excuse me, on Canada and Mexico. That's socialism.
Mm-hmm.
That's government more wanting to control the capital and the means of production,
right?
Through putting in tariffs. So when the president screams, as he did last week at CPAC, that he's against socialism, well, he's against some socialism, but when socialism fits what he believes is his need, where he believes he can control an economy, which, as you see with the trade imbalance, he cannot.
Right.
Well, that's a socialist move by the president. Don't get angry at me. It's the definition of socialism. It's controlling it's the government controlling the means of production by controlling the capital, and that's what tariffs do.
And if you believe in tariffs and believe they're a good thing, you're not negotiating to remove them.
Right. And the president, again, keeps using the term lose as if trade is a zero-sum game.
Right.
That there's only one good trade form, and the trade form is when you get the dollar and sell the product instead of getting the product and giving them the piece of paper. You getting the piece of paper or the electronic currency, however it is, because the nitpickers will be out there, it's not currency, it's digital, trying to make a point.
Right, yes.
Whether it's paper or the digital currency, that is the only positive way of trade, and the other way is a loss. Well, that's ridiculous.
Right.
Of course it's not a loss. You've got something of value that makes you more productive and efficient, and you have voluntarily, chosen that.
Right.
So, with the whole, trade deficit, again, it shows you what we've always said. Can the central government, whether it's one person or a group of people, the Politburo, can they control an economy? Yes. Can they do it most efficiently and make it work? No.
No. No. And you, the free market approach is for the government to get out of the way, allow our producers to sell their goods to the world. Because, again, if you don't believe in free trade at all, okay, fine. However, we're never going to return to a true protectionist, isolationist economy. You can't.
And if you
because you can ignore the world.
And if you believe it, then do it.
Well,
to the president, if you believe it, then do it.
If you believe that's the right thing to do, then you don't waver.
Right.
Because using it as a negotiating tactic when you actually believe it's not the right thing to do means that you're willing to inflict pain on industry domestically. And that's unacceptable for any amount of time. Now, renegotiating with China, being tough on China, there are, again, when it came to intellectual property rights, and they get that done, that is going to be a win. Politically, I don't know how you make it right with those farm states. I'm just putting that out there. I don't know. And maybe he will. Maybe long term, it's not going to affect him. We won't know until November of next year.
Well, one of the things farmers are complaining about is it took them decades to get into the supply chain.
Exactly.
And getting out of it, now the other countries don't know. Well, wait a minute. If he's reelected again, will he disagree with us and then do it again because he's not facing reelection again? So
right.
If he believes it's truly about trust.
It's about trust.
Can we have trust that the president won't declare again a national security situation and do it on food this time and hurt us again and therefore disrupt the supply chain again? We don't need that. We can get it from Australia. We can get it from wherever. Yes. We don't need to get it from the United States. Those are the real world things that happen. The rhetoric may be great and it may satisfy people, but then there's the real world implications of everything.
Right. And reestablishing those trade routes, by the way, is going to be something that there is still an uphill. They'll still be working on it by the time November of next year comes around. When those tariffs are lifted, they're still going to have to work at reestablishing those trade routes. And again, how many farms are completely gone or damaged beyond repair? I don't have those numbers in front of me. Politically, that's going to be the task for the president.
Yeah, we did go through the numbers, was it 2 weeks ago, with the bankruptcies, farming bankruptcies at a 10-year high.
Right, yeah, right. I mean, again, if you don't trust that person is going to do the right thing, there are two things you do. You stay home or you vote for the other side.
And the other one that I'm worried about is because of the salt taxes, because of the salt situation. Now, the president, I believe, has recognized that and has talked about the fact that, well, maybe we should revisit it. But in many areas,
and Democrats already want to.
We've talked about this in many areas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to get up to that $10,000 limit,
and not just the blue states where there
not
are
the
red districts. We're talking
red
about
states.
Red states, and we talked about that when that actually happened. We said there are people here in red states that are going to be affected, depending on the value of their property.
And you're hitting middle to upper middle class suburban areas, which are Republican.
Active voters.
And we said this when the Republicans were doing this. We said, whoa, you could be putting yourselves in peril in the future. And now this year, in the next couple of months, is where people are going to be hit. And then again next year at this time, if it stays, they're going to get hit again. Those are our worries for 2020.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Winter time can be tough on trucks. Corrosion often occurs naturally over time, but major causes of corrosion are multiplied during the winter months. While salt solutions on the road are essential to safe driving, they can also wreak havoc on your electrical system. The acidic nature of these chemicals will erode any exposed connections or wires in no time. These materials can also eat away at the frame, undercarriage, braking system, and any other exposed components. Add an electrical systems check to your preventative maintenance routine. This is crucial to help ensure the longevity of your truck's lifespan, especially during winter, when vehicles are more susceptible to corrosive elements on the road. Stop into a TA truck service to have your electrical system inspected by one of our trained technicians today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, we played last hour a focus group of Democrat voters, just because that's one of our big questions. What are Democrat voters actually thinking about where the Democrat Party is going? Not the politician, but the actual voters. We go to Donna in Raleigh, North Carolina, who is a Democrat. Donna, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Hi.
I have been a registered Democrat since 1977, and I cannot imagine what my party is thinking right now.
Yeah. I wonder.
It's unbelievable.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you support somebody like a Joe Biden? Hello?
No.
Okay.
She had to think about it.
Well, no, I voted for Trump last.
Oh, you voted for Trump. Oh, okay. Okay. Then you're not saying that you voted for Trump then. I thought you were still a Democrat. Are you still registered as a Democrat but voted for Trump?
I'm still registered. Registered Democrat. I didn't vote for Trump. I've actually voted Libertarian last year.
Oh, okay. So you did not vote for Trump. Okay. All right.
No. Hmm. But I probably will this year.
Wow.
Well, then you're not really, if you're voting Libertarian, was that just a protest vote or are you more Libertarian? Because if that's the case, if you truly believe in Libertarian mindset, you've moved a long, long way from the Democrat.
Well, the way they are now. Oh, absolutely,
yes.
I have. I mean, I don't know what happened. I mean, since when did murder become okay? Yeah, it's just, I don't understand it. I'm at a loss.
Okay.
And Cortez is, I'm not a Trump fan, but he could say the sky is blue, and they'll argue with him for the full fact that he said the sky is blue.
Yeah, we've made that point that they'll argue just because it's him. You can look at the situation with the wall. It's not about the wall. It's not about the money.
Yeah,
it's about Trump.
But as a Democrat, you don't seem to hate Trump. In order to get the Democrat badge, don't you need to hate Trump?
Well, the new ones, yeah, but
the new badge.
I'm not new. I'm pushing 60.
Okay,
but this is. I mean, I consider myself a Reagan Democrat.
Okay,
yeah. All right.
Well, then that means you're now a conservative Republican.
Yeah.
Sorry, but that if you were a Reagan Democrat now, and part of me is joking a little bit, but really I'm more serious. You really. Are now you have evolved just because of the way the parties have moved. You are more of a moderate conservative Republican, probably with a little bit of libertarian in you.
Yeah, and
because that's how quickly
really
it's
kind of scary. It's scary the way the left has moved.
Yeah, we've talked
Isn't
about
it?
We talked about it. We've also talked about, and thank you, Donna, for the call. We've also talked about some of the old school Democrats, especially coming out of the '60s, who would. Likely be libertarian today or conservative.
My grandfather
mm-hmm.
was a Democrat.
Yeah. Sure.
Democrat rep from a town. And when he immigrated from Canada, he said, hey, it's all Republican. You need to have two parties. I'm in America now.
Mm.
He wouldn't even recognize the Democrat Party today.
The vast majority of Americans have no idea what we're talking about. Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, that's true.
He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Yeah, so the last caller who used to be a Democrat. Mm-hmm. So I guess technically is still registered, but is far from a Democrat. I always think about it, and I'll occasionally talk to my dad about it, but not too much anymore. I remember the first time was probably in the 90s when, you know, I said, you always told me the story about, you know, Gramps, this would be my grandpa McNamara, I said, was a Democrat. Explain it to me. And he said, yeah, when he immigrated. I think he probably was around, I'm going to guess, 1910 when he immigrated to the United States because of the incredible bigotry of Irish Catholics in Ontario. That's why he got out. It was tough to find a job. The bigotry was unbelievable.
Right.
And I didn't know that until my dad told me the story just a few years ago. I did not know that. I did the research and found out, wow, it was really true. And when my grandfather came, the town that he settled in was all Republican. And he came to the United States and he built his own business. And he thought to himself when he got over here, he said, there's supposed to be two parties. That's why I'm here. Hmm. And so he helped form the Democrat Party in the town that I grew up in. And then became a Democrat representative and all that. And I asked my dad in the 90s, I said, would he be a Democrat today? And that was probably 25 years ago. My father said, no way. And I said, why? And he said, well, went to church. You know, he was a practicing Catholic. And so abortion itself, he said, changed him completely. Because that was it for the Democrats. So he said, no, he said, your grandfather was extremely conservative. And so I wonder what a lot of people would look at. I really wonder how, and I'm being serious, how a Joe Biden looks at the Democrat Party. Does think about this. I mean, Biden was around for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Biden was around when all the Democrats believed that we needed to protect our borders.
Yeah, right. Well, even Harry Reid said we needed to protect our borders.
Right. Well, even Chuck Schumer said.
Yeah.
Even Dianne Feinstein said.
Yeah, yeah.
Even Obama said.
Exactly.
But as you know, notice, all those people that did that are now being marginalized by the new Democrats. Here's my thought, and I don't think you could ever get an interview out of Biden that where he would answer this.
Where he would talk honestly.
Where he would talk honestly about it. Because if I was Biden, I wouldn't either. Because he sees what's happening to the party right now. But I wonder if you could get Biden off the record. If part of the reason that he would be running is not because he could just win the presidency, but he believes that he could, him running and winning would help moderate and therefore save the Democrat Party. If that's not a part of the mindset in somebody like Biden, it wouldn't be for a Sanders because he's full into all of it. But I have a hard time believing, and I could be completely wrong, but I have a hard time believing that Biden actually buys into an Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing the majority of the Democrats in power right now buy into Ocasio-Cortez. Now, there's a couple of things there. If you're part of the old guard, you don't want to see the ushering in of the future of the party. You certainly don't want to see that if they're not in line with, I guess, your values or what you're promoting, or if you see their ideology is radical, or if you see it as damaging. But beyond that, how many Democrats have come out on the Green New Deal? For all of those who jumped on board with it officially, look at the number of Democrats who just dismissed it.
Well, where's the loud Democrat saying, this isn't my party, you people are nuts?
Right.
Where's that person?
She's unemployed. Her name is Claire McCaskill.
Touche.
Yeah, you can find her this Friday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Hobby Lobby.
Well, even Joe Manchin. I mean, he's doing his own thing, but he's not really being loud about it. But you think about it. Why is Joe Manchin even a Democrat?
Yeah, right.
How much?
Well, there's no room on the fence for being on the fence anymore.
Well, no, remember, Ocasio-Cortez is putting together her list. Mm-hmm. Now, it may be a House list and not a Senate list, but...
Right.
She's putting together a list and checking it twice.
Yes.
Three times, maybe.
Right.
Can you imagine being a member of Congress and somebody like that comes in and putting you on a list?
I'm putting you on a list.
Oh, man. Because
I'm the boss. Yeah, no, you're not yet. You might be one day. You're not yet. But effectively, if she's driving enough of the young vote. Okay, so we talked about Skater Bob, Beto O'Rourke in Texas when he was running against Ted Cruz. He did not seek the help of the former president, Barack Obama. That's a huge deal. Do the Democrats as a party, for the DNC to ban Fox News from having primary debates, oh, no. You know, like it was a big deal, right? But what about the DNC on Ocasio-Cortez? Not that they would ban her from the debates. But where do they put her in terms of the value of her endorsement in 2020, for president? I mean, she's obviously going to endorse herself as she'll be running again for her seat. But, I mean, as a party, she's the most vocal. This continues. She's been one of the prominent members in terms of activity. She's certainly the most prominent of the younger demographic. Are they going to seek her endorsement? Will she speak at the DNC?
Ocasio-Cortez?
Right.
I think she'll... She won't be a... What is it, Tuesday night? Or is it... I can't remember.
The first one?
Is it Tuesday night, Wednesday, or is it Monday, Tuesday?
Yeah. She might be Tuesday
morning.
She might
be Tuesday. She might. No, she may not make Wednesday or Thursday. Right. I don't know. That's a long time. She could be a Wednesday.
Who knows? By then, she could be a Thursday. Maybe she opens it on Thursday.
Uh-huh. She could be a Friday.
Well, by then,
I, Skater Bob, as my vice presidential running mate, have decided to pick Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. So she could be a Thursday night. Mm. Excuse me. She could be a Wednesday night speaker because she could be a vice presidential candidate.
Now, what?
Tell me, how would that hurt? Who wouldn't support her in the Democrat? If it keeps going the same way that it is, I'm not saying they could win the general election, but I'm saying that if you want to have and unite the Democrats, whoever it would be, if it was Kamala Harris, what if I want Ocasio-Cortez behind me? We're going to make it the first dual woman. Is that going to hurt you? If it's a Harris or if it's a Cory Booker, is an Ocasio-Cortez going to hurt you to unite the Democrat Party? It might hurt you with independents, but if you're in this delusional land as that they're in right now, that they're trying to sell the American public the Green New Deal and to sell her as part of it, they're willing to sell anything, aren't they?
Well, look at how many of them, are jumped against Trump on the wall. That's not just because it's Trump. Primarily, it is. But part of that is because of where the rank and file is going, right?
Yeah.
If there's enough of people, of the people in terms of the rank and file, and we had six of them on earlier from the CNN thing, that thinks she's the future of the party, even if she's not picked as a running mate, do you not need her endorsement? You do.
I'm just thinking about for Obama out there saying, well, we need to have more Obamas and Michelles, and nobody's paying attention to him.
Okay, Jeff Bezos decides in June of 2019 he's going to run, and his campaign headquarters are going to be in her district. Will she endorse him? No, but from the other side, who in the pool right now is she willing to endorse? She's making a list.
Now, her endorsement, I think, will be important. Look, and people scoff.
Bernie? I guess it's
people
Bernie.
Scoff at the fact, well, they wouldn't make her a vice presidential candidate. She doesn't have experience. Experience doesn't matter anymore.
Oh, no.
They'll look at that and say, Trump had no experience. She's smart. She's young. We need somebody who is smart and young. Obama was too old.
Mm-hmm.
He had too much experience. Remember, she's bold. We're in a
courageous.
We're in a brave, new, bold world.
Mm-hmm.
But you heard the focus group. They were so impressed with her. She's so incredibly intelligent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. I bought some spicy chips the other day. It said bold on the label. I thought, yeah, get in line.
Well, that's, you know, so anything is possible. But you make a great point. All these candidates up there trying to get, Ocasio-Cortez has not yet endorsed a candidate. She plans on doing it this Friday. A massive press conference is set up.
Yeah.
A massive stage has been set up. Who will Ocasio-Cortez? This is something that we'll be talking about for months. Who will she be? Everybody is trying to court her. Will she be a vice presidential candidate?
Well, she won't be this time around because she's not old enough. She's not 35 yet.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so she's not going to be on this ticket, but they'll need her as the endorsement.
No, thank you. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's my fault. Never. Hold it. Never mind.
Or will the Democrats look to amend the Constitution?
Okay, she won't be this time.
No, but
I'm sorry. I got caught up in the emotion of the moment.
Well, wait a minute.
I wasn't thinking.
I don't know that she won't, because the Constitution isn't the boss. She's the boss. But the party, will the party need her endorsement? And then who would she endorse? Okay, Bernie, let's say Bernie is not the nominee. Only because Bernie's not going to be the nominee. That's the only reason I say that. But if Bernie is not the nominee, is she willing to endorse Biden? Does the party go to her? Remember the whole thing with Hillary and Bernie? And then all of a sudden, you know, it comes out, and then, you know, whoever hacked into the DNC, through that we learn the ushering in of Hillary as the nominee. Well, and everybody was asking, are you, after getting burned, is he going to endorse her? Well, yeah, he did. Now, that's different. That was so 2016. If Biden is the nominee, is she going to endorse Biden?
Maybe she'll say no and she'll endorse Howard Schultz.
Or Jeff Bezos.
That's not going to happen.
Probably not.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Quickly to Tom in Connecticut. Tom, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Gary, Eric, thanks for taking my call.
You
have a question for you. It seems like the Democrats are starting to use that same theorem or formula when they used with Barack Obama about rising up a new political figure. What happens if AOC gets investigated by the FEC, the federal, I think it's the Federal Elections Committee?
Yes.
For her misappropriation of campaign funds.
Mm-hmm.
And if she does get smacked with any kind of violation or corruption or anything, What happens if she gets booted out of the Congress? Where does that leave the Democrats with a candidate for the future? What does that do to the party? I've been listening to you guys for the last hour talking about.
Again, you're hitting something way too soon. We don't know whether it would be a serious violation, whether it would be a fine, or whether some of the news stories have said she could receive jail time. If it was a felony and got jail time, she'd be out of office. Who would replace her? I don't know, but somebody would replace her.
Yeah.
I can't tell you. I can't predict the future.
And I would tell you, in terms of the party being concerned who the future is going to be, the party's not concerned. Many in the party don't want her to be the future. So there, you might have a few concerns, but that gets back down to, you know, the districts. We've talked about everybody talking about term limits, you know, for the House and the Senate. Whatever district or state you're in, until that makeup changes, you're not going to change the type of person that serves.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. In the news, the Democrat National Committee has barred Fox News from hosting any of its presidential primary debates, prompting the network to urge the party to reconsider. Fox put out a statement, "We hope the DNC will reconsider its decision to bar Chris Wallace, Brett Baer, and Martha McCallum, all of whom embody the ultimate journalistic integrity and professionalism, for moderating a Democratic presidential debate. They're the best debate team in the business, and they offer candidates an important opportunity to make their case to the largest TV news audience in America, which includes many persuadable voters," said the Fox News senior vice president in a statement. Earlier in the day, the head of the DNC, Tom Perez, came out and said, nope, because they're too biased. They're the propaganda arm for the president.
So they're going with the other networks that are not biased at all.
Yes. Yes. They're going with the fair and balanced networks.
That's right. They report and you shut up.
I mean, I laughed when I saw it because it was a chuckle. Brett Baer put out a tweet. That's really a shame. When it comes to fairness, our news product speaks for itself. We will continue to cover this 2020 race fairly. We will continue to invite Democrats, Republicans, and independents on to talk about key issues and substance with our very large viewing audience. Look, it's obvious they don't want to answer the tough questions. Mm.
Right.
We've said this before. They don't wish to debate the substance of the issues. They want to make it as easy as possible because they don't wish to discuss the actual issues and the substance on the issues with anybody who would take the opposing viewpoint on it. And so we're going to go with the people that will soft sell it for us.
Right.
We're going to go the easiest route possible. So it's no surprise. And the whole thing that, well, the propaganda arm of the Trump administration, as has been pointed out, they have their bias shows just like MSNBC and CNN has their bias shows. There is nobody in the industry, nobody, that is saying that the news division of Fox News, the news division, not the political pundit division, is not a credible news division.
Right.
You've got Chris Wallace, Brett Baer, Martha McCallum, Bill Hemmer. You've got Catherine Herridge, mm-hmm. who is one of the best. You've got great journalists who work there that are completely separate from the opinion makers, and everybody knows it.
And I would say to the DNC, Okay, let's assume what you're saying is absolutely true across the board. Isn't that a great opportunity for you to debate the other side? Well, because it's not that you're debating the other side. You're not debating Trump.
No, you're not.
You would be answering a question. You would be responding to a Chris Wallace. So would you not? But the point is that you're making a point to Trump's audience. You don't want to do that? Why not? He's wrong, right? He's a doofus.
Right.
He's not fit to be president. Then being on Fox News should be the least of your worries. In fact, that should be the greatest opportunity ever to discount that. Because if you look at the way these debates happen, are they afraid of a follow-up question? Remember when President Obama appeared on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, and Chris Wallace accidentally asked a follow-up question? Oh, we didn't know he was going to ask a follow-up question. But that's the point. I mean, it's that side who jumped out, and defended Jim Acosta, saying, well, the president was wrong for casting him out and everything else. Because they believe, I don't know, on the surface they do, although we're told that many in the press corps don't like Jim Acosta, but that's a separate point. But they believe that the president should have to answer tough questions. These are people that want to be the next president. And they believe that they will easily defeat, or that they are better, smarter, their ideas are better and smarter than the current president. Why would you not take that opportunity in front of his core base? Why not? Well, the answer to that question is because they don't really want to get into the critical thinking that you might get from those reporters that are going to be, or hosts that will be moderating those debates, like a Chris Wallace.
Look at this here. Because we've talked about it, would be the news people, not Sean Hannity, won't be asking it.
Right.
What we forget is, go back to February of 2016. Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
Chuck Todd. Now Chuck Todd's going to claim that he's a news person. Okay, because he does a new show.
And I'm the king of England.
Right. Rachel Maddow. Is she a news person or she is an opinion maker? She asks questions. As far as I know, hasn't also Chris Matthews been a moderator in the past? I'll have to check on that. Rachel Maddow was, she asked it one time. Nobody's saying Sean Hannity's going to be on the panel for Fox News.
Right.
But MSNBC in 2016 had Rachel Maddow on. She's an opinion person. She's not a news person.
Right.
She asked questions in the Democrat debate in February 2016.
If you're promoting what you believe, look, these are people that want to be the next president. Are you not going to campaign in red states? Oh, wait, when you have a rally, it's filled with friendlies.
Here's what I was wondering, though, because Trump was not specific on it. He said, fine, we'll do the, I'm paraphrasing here, we'll do the same when it comes to,
the presidential debate.
The presidential debates. So only Fox News will carry the debates?
Right. Yeah, that's not going to happen. There's going to, well,
don't make a promise you can't keep.
I won't promise you that the president will show up at each one of them. Knowing him, he could go, yeah, no thanks, I'll do a rally instead. I'm not going to predict anything from this president.
You're right.
Or the scenario, because you have to consider all the parties involved and what the behavior has been, including the president, over the last couple of years. But if you're running...
We'll do a rumble instead of a debate.
Right. If you're running for president, you want to be the next president, you believe you'd make a better president than Trump, you shouldn't be afraid to speak anywhere. Our colleague Ben Shapiro goes to very liberal campuses on a regular basis.
Yeah.
He's not afraid. Why would anybody that wants to be president...
Well, as we know, though, and maybe this is the culture of the Democrat Party, because remember, and I don't think we should discount this, and you brought it up already, remember when President Obama was on with Chris Wallace, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was furious because they asked follow-up questions,
right.
And he was livid. And he stated, I didn't know there was going to be follow-up questions.
Right.
Well, at that point, he was president of the United States, was correct?
Yeah.
And he was still furious that there was a follow-up. Think about that. You're a civil servant. That's mm-hmm. what you are. As mm-hmm. president of the United States, you're still a civil servant. You're actually not the boss.
No, you're not.
You are in service to the people of the United States. and so a follow-up question I would look at as expected, would you not?
Yeah.
But that's when you look at the culture of the political class today, and specifically the Democrats, they do everything that they possibly can to avoid questions. Say what you want about Trump. He'll put himself out there to his detriment at times
mm-hmm.
and just go, all right, let's go. And he'll fight with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's wrong. Excuse me, I thought you wanted people to ask questions and for the politicians to answer honestly.
Right.
And when you find out what they actually want as Democrats, they want you to ask one question. And Obama was excellent at this. He would filibuster and give a 6 or 7 minute answer.
Right.
And they say, well, Mr. President, you didn't answer the question. The question was, and then he would call you rude for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you? I answered your question. I didn't expect a follow up like that. You keep following up on the same question. That's because you didn't answer it.
Right.
That's rude. You don't do that to a president. Well, yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
It's expected.
That's what you should be doing as a journalist. If the question isn't answered, you ask it again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the arrogance that you get from many in the political class. They actually don't wish to. So don't waste our time. Don't waste our time with debates if you're not going to actually, you know, do what you can to either get an answer from the person or let the public know, make it obvious they won't answer the question.
Well, I mean, it's not like they're going to, you know, like get the candidate the questions ahead of time.
Only on CNN, which, of course, the DNC is okay with.
Well, and that's the whole point.
Well, by the way, who is anybody? We get the emails from WikiLeaks. Who is Perez in the DNC endorsing this time around?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do we know you?
Skater Bob.
He's going to come out on the debate stage on a skateboard. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. But if...
Can you imagine him answering the questions the way he's been answering them so far? And we read the one article yesterday. Was it the... I can't remember. Was it Atlantic or New York Times? I can't remember. That was... He's still doing the same thing. Well, what do you think about this? Well, it's really not what I think. It's what the people think. And I'm here to find out what the people actually want. Can you imagine him going through the debate like that?
Yeah. But what do you believe?
I believe the people should be heard, and I believe the people.
I'm with the people. What people? The people. The people. I think I made that clear. What people? The people.
People.
It'll be interesting to see what questions are asked during the debate. Remember, in 2016, you couldn't be a late night comedian and tussle the hair of the Republican candidate. You couldn't be Matt Lauer. Oh, man, that was so 2016.
By the way, you couldn't even be in an entertainment show and tussle his hair, yet now be a journalist on CNN.
And go shopping. Yes. But here's my question. You're asking too many tough questions of Hillary and not enough tough questions of Trump. All right. Keep in mind, they're programming for an audience. They're not looking to serve the public. They're not looking for answers. I could see a Chuck Todd open the debate with, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate Trump? Remember, you only have 9 minutes per answer.
Would everybody be a 10?
Yeah. Mine goes to 11.
Nobody could be a 9, could they?
The problem with your question, Mr. Todd, with all due respect, is that your scale's not big enough.
Mine goes to 11.
Because, seriously, remember the piece from the former editor of the New York Times and the criticism of her former employer and the way it's being run now is that it's all about clicks with Trump. They know that they can get subscription level up if they just write more about Trump. Because all the liberals love Trump. That's why. But the point is that it's going to be, do they believe, are they worried about getting shamed for their moderators at a CNN or an MSNBC asking tough questions?
Ah, since we have to relate 2016 to now, is the fix in? That the cooperation is going to be that we actually don't debate one another. All the questions are against Trump. We don't debate each other. We don't debate each other. We don't go at each other. Mm-hmm. Every question, every candidate that's on stage is only debating Trump, and Trump doesn't get a response.
Yes. President Trump wants to build a wall. Tell me why he's wrong. But seriously,
the only debate would be, well, I hate Trump more than you do.
Right. Yes.
No, you don't.
With all due respect, Senator, I hate him more.
With all due respect, Senator, you don't. I hate him more than you hate him. My hate is times two of your hate.
Yes. And mine goes to 11.
866-90-RUN-HIGH.
USDA is taking additional steps to keep African swine fever from entering the United States, even as the disease spreads internationally.
Maybe we need to redouble the efforts in the light of African swine fever and the threat that it's presenting to us.
That was Undersecretary Greg Ibaugh.
We now have 40 labs across the United States that are capable of doing tests for African swine fever. So that's an extreme beef up from where we were. I think that gives us the capability of doing 35,000 tests per day if we would need to.
The new activities include working with Customs and Border Patrol to train and add 60 additional Beagle teams to sniff out illegal pork products at key commercial, sea, and airports. African swine fever is a highly contagious and deadly viral disease that affects both domestic and feral pigs. It is spread via contact with the body fluids of infected animals. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we'll have the announcement from Alex Trebek from Jeopardy, how he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Just devastating news yesterday. More on the way coming up.
Here is your forecast.
We'll continue to see scattered rain showers in the west in California and snow showers in some of the upper elevations of the mountain regions of the Pacific Northwest and Central Rockies. A portion of that energy has broken off and will provide snow showers for parts of the northern and central plains today. If you're going to be traveling I-80 in and around Des Moines all the way out through, well, Cheyenne, as a matter of fact, and I-29 north and south through Nebraska, you can expect to run into some wintry precip, as much as about 4 inches of snow expected. And you look at Des Moines today, a high of 25 degrees. By Saturday, the high is 41. The moisture remains, so we'll go from snow to rain in the course of the next 48 hours. That entire system is advancing eastward. We'll see portions of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio affected with some mixed wintry precip. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Unvarnished and honest. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. It was said news yesterday as the host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek, announced that he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
Just like 50,000 other people in the United States each year, this week I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Now, normally, the prognosis for this is not very encouraging, but I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to keep working, and with the love and support of my family and friends, and with the help of your prayers also, I plan to beat the low survival rate statistics for this disease. Truth told, I have to, because under the terms of my contract, I have to host Jeopardy for 3 more years. So help me. Keep the faith. And we'll win. We'll get it done.
An amazing moment in life when somebody who is, in essence, telling you that they don't have long for this earth and they've just found that out in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Can, in that same statement within a minute, make you laugh.
You know, his sense of humor, I think, is totally underestimated and totally underappreciated by too many people. He's very funny if you watch the show, and so many have. I mean, you know, if you think about it, he goes back to, what, 84 is when he began, I think.
Yeah.
It seems like, it just feels like he's always been there. 84 to me, you know, I know it's a long time ago. It was actually the year I graduated high school. But it feels like he's been there since 1960. It just feels like he was always there in the living room. But this is the first time that we've ever had any personal connection with him. Think about that. There hasn't really been the personal side of Alex Trebek. He's been whatever you want to call him, the professor, because I've always seen him as somebody who's almost like a teacher in that way. Because I've always felt all of those topics and categories that he's covered over the years, that he was the expert in them. Because he'll make comments, he'll say, and he is a highly intelligent human being. So you felt like you were learning something. I think that's the point. And you felt great when you could answer even one question in that 30 minutes. But that was all that... on a different level, almost like the relationship you have with your teacher, until one day something personal happens in their life and it kind of hits you in the gut.
The game show host that nobody really viewed as a game show host.
No, I mean, he's not. I love Pat Sajak. He's very funny as well. I follow him on Twitter. I love his humor. But even he is different. And he would tell you that. Alex Trebek is kind of the, and I think it was because of the role, right? But also because of the person and the, and his, you know, the way he carried out that role. You know, we're not talking about like the dating game.
No.
You know, gentlemen, if you were going to eat olives, would you use a fork or a spoon? Bachelor number one. I mean, it's not that.
Right.
It's not Bob Eubanks. It's not Pat Sajak. You almost felt like you needed to sit up straight and wear a button-up shirt. You know, you feel like that when you're watching Jeopardy.
No, but that's
that
a great point.
Because
it was almost as, okay, we got to pay attention.
Right.
And again, you know, that's a time that you and I are both, most of the time we're sleeping.
Yeah,
so
right. I don't see it much these days.
I rarely ever got to see it much, except whenever I'm back visiting my parents,
right, yeah,
and they're watching it all the time. But mm-hmm. there are times when, and especially times if I go back to see them on a Friday and it's on Friday night and I haven't slept all day.
Right.
And when he comes on and my parents, of course, have to watch it, I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't want to watch this because I have to think.
Right, right.
Because it was almost as if, okay, this isn't just to enjoy it. Now I've got to see if I can beat them in the answer and suck me in every single time. Even those times I was like, oh, I really don't want to get involved. I got involved. But what really got me yesterday, and I was happened to be on my phone and looking at social media when it popped up, TMZ, and it said, you know, Alex Trebek, stage 4 cancer. Here's the announcement. Mm. I'm like, oh, boy. And I watched it, and like everybody laughed at the end when he said, I've got a contract, I have to fulfill it.
Right.
And you laughed, and I went, at that moment I went, here's somebody who is an American icon, but a very subtle American icon. Not loud, right. Not in your face, mm-hmm. Not a rock idol,
right.
Not that kind of thing, but they're almost going on 4 decades.
Mm-hmm.
A huge, most people that are living today, the majority of their lives, he has been around and he's been there after dinner. Mm-hmm. And he, even though he's a game show host, people don't view him as a game show host. They probably view him as a professor, an instructor, somebody who has been in their life, somebody who has challenged them, but in a very subtle way. And I didn't realize the impact he had until that moment where he let us know, I may not be around a long time.
Right.
It hit me. I just went, yeah. Wow, what an impact he has had on American culture.
Right.
Over an enormous amount of time.
I know I'm not alone on this. There are times when, you know, in the past when, and sometimes even still on a Friday and I'm awake because I don't keep the same hours.
Right.
And I'm just cruising through the channels at that time. And I come across Jeopardy. And I say to myself very quickly, no. Because I need to skip class. Because I'm not feeling up to it today.
Yes.
Because it really is part, not just because, I mean, if you think about it, it's a trivia game. But it's not because of the way he hosts it. He has more of an instructional approach. He does have fun with it, but it is like, man, if I come across the show just by chance on certain days, I'm thinking I'm not going to sneak one in on the professor today. So I don't even want to try. And then boom, I'm off to another channel. And I just don't, because I don't feel up to it. That's a different kind of standard that I think only he brought to that show. You could have others that did that, but he really had that demeanor where you felt like, okay, I need to sit up straight. I need to take this very seriously, like you're in class.
And I hate to say it, if he didn't exist, the greatest bit ever on SNL would not have existed.
Gosh. No, that was, and they took it. It was so well done because of the thought behind it. You know, take what if you had all of these, and man, who was it? You had, of course, Norm Macdonald doing Burt Reynolds. You know, you had, what's his name, doing Sean Connery. Daryl Hammond.
Yes.
If you those are iconic moments. And, of course, Will Ferrell playing Alex Trebek.
Yes, exactly.
But Will Ferrell, even though some of the lines were funny, had to play that, you know, tie and, right. and sit up straight role because that's kind of what it demanded, even though he was frustrated with Sean.
And the other thing from the showbiz part of it that I think will be recognized here, you'll see it here in the next couple of days where people will talk about it, the longevity of a show which has been on since 84, that's 35 years, that means that in syndication, he has had to draw ratings for 35 years.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. I mean, that is 0.00000001% of all syndicated TV shows in the history of television. It just doesn't happen. It's that big of a rarity.
You know, they talk about back in the day, I think there may be even a documentary of Hollywood Squares. They would talk about how they filmed the filming schedule for a lot of these shows. I don't know if it still is the case, but back then it was. You would film a week in 2 days, right? A week in 1 day, five shows in 1 day. So you would do three shows in the morning, go to lunch, and then you would do two shows in the afternoon after lunch. And someone made the comment that had been on, and I forget who it was, that had been on Hollywood Squares. They said, always pay attention to the Thursday and Friday shows because they had three, four, five martini lunches on a regular basis. Okay? Then you add to it, right?
I never heard that. This is great. I never heard this before.
And they said, always pay attention to those shows that aired later in the week. Because often, and not everybody, you couldn't brand all the celebrities, but a number of the celebrities would drink at lunch and then come back and they were, you know, giggly and just had more fun. Match Game, Gene Rayburn.
Oh.
Some of the comedy lines and moments that come out of that. But Jeopardy became one of those that was different. You know, it became instantly... Well, that dude is wearing a suit and tie for a reason. I know they all did, all the hosts did, but it was like you were at a campus, a college campus, and you were taking it seriously. And that's why I say I think a lot of people really underappreciated over the years have underappreciated his humor and Alex Trebek. I mean, just. In such a moment and making this announcement still has that humor about it.
He's going to keep doing the show for the rest of the year and as long as possible. But definitely, he said, we'll finish the rest of the season. And I don't know how long the season goes in a game show.
I don't know how Bob Barker was replaced by Drew Carey.
Yes.
And apparently it does really well still, right? I have no idea who... you know, in the event that he does not survive this, I don't know who you would have that could fit, you know, that role at Jeopardy. I don't. I really don't. No, Brian says Craig Ferguson. Craig is very funny. He's very smart. I think there are plenty of people that can do the job. And the show may survive as, you know, I mean, the show... likely would survive because I think it's become an institution. But Alex Trebek is part of that show. I mean, in the case where Pat Sajak retires one day, you know, I could probably think of, no disrespect to Pat Sajak, but a number of people who could do that and the show might still go on and have no problem. But I don't know who you put on Jeopardy that can fill the shoes of an Alex Trebek. I don't know.
No, I don't. A show that has been on that long, I just can't. I can't tell you. Especially
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Am I wrong?
I don't think he'd take it.
I don't think he would do it, but I think he could do it.
Yes.
because people do take him seriously, and he also has a sense of humor.
What is the survival rate for stage 4 pancreatic cancer?
It is not good. It's very low.
Maybe 5%.
It is very low beyond 24 to 36 months.
But, yeah.
It's very low.
And I'm talking about the 5-year survival rate.
Yeah, the 5-year is usually that measurement, and those numbers are very,
very low.
Yes. Yeah.
We wish him the best. Keep him in your thoughts and prayers. An American institution.
Yeah.
And just devastating news yesterday.
Yeah, it's just, I just can't imagine. My thoughts and prayers are with him and his family that and all of those that will be a part of that support crew during this treatment.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How are you treating your truck this winter? Stay prepared by treating your fuel with the proper additives. The most commonly used additives help decrease fuel gelling during colder months, but certain additives can benefit your truck in a number of ways. Cetane boosters can help boost your fuel's cetane rating, which improves the ignition quality of the fuel. This means your fuel will burn faster and result in a smoother and quieter running engine, as well as quicker engine starts. If you're dealing with damage to fuel pumps and injectors, use a detergent additive, which can help dissolve harmful deposits that form on these critical parts of the truck. Whether you're trying to combat fuel gelling or boost your cetane rating, an additive may be just what you need. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So it's going to be interesting to see what the president has to say. He really didn't comment much yesterday on the trade deficit.
Yeah.
And you wonder if he's going to make any comment on that.
I think what you'll hear is we're working on getting the issues with China and trade with China resolved, and we're going to have a great deal. It's going to happen, and it'll happen soon. Many believe it will happen in the next few weeks. We'll see if that actually gets done.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.